Okay, good afternoon. We have the enormous privilege to learn Baba Basra together this year. And I know it sounds like this every year. I love every Masechta and get very excited about every Masechta, but still each one has its own unique aspects to it. We should call the story that I think it was Rebbe Ber Leibowitz, who was in the middle of Shir, and he said, this is a Geshmak Rashba, something like that. And then he said, it's Elul, after the Tshuva, all of Torah is Geshmak. So here it is, Elul, and I'm saying this Masechta is a beautiful Masechta. It's not that the rest of the Torah is not, God forbid, every Masechta is beautiful, and you guys know that you're in love with every Masechta. It started off with a particular excitement. Last year it was Pesachim, it was unbelievable, and the year before that, Chulin was unbelievable. Every Masechta has a unique beauty to it. And that is for sure the case when it comes to Baba Basra. This is a unbelievable opportunity for us to learn something very different and something that has tremendous unique value to us. And there is so much for us to explore that we'll try to cover over this first parak and the next parak, Be'ezus Hashem, as much time as we can. And first, we need to understand a little bit in the context of this first Mishnah, which you had a chance to see, what is the Masechta about? And we generally try to use the first Mishnah as a springboard to explore what the Masechta is about, and this is very true here. And as you got a chance to see a little bit, the Rishonim overall often raise the question, Tosus usually raise the question as they do here, in the beginning of a parak, in the beginning of a Masechta, as to why that Mishnah is there, why does the Masechta start with the Mishnah that it does. And we've often taken the perspective that there's usually yesodos of the Masechta that are revealed through the Mishnah, that the first Mishnah may fit with the flow, it may fit with the subject matter that came before, as Tosfos here and often suggests, but there's usually also something very fundamental that is in the Mishnah, and that's the case here, as we'll see, even though there is a double extra challenge to this Mishnah. Using this Mishnah to try to understand what the Masechta is about has a double challenge to it. First of all, because it's not clear that this really is the beginning of a Masechta, as Tosfos raises, really originally one big Masechta, all the Bavas. So this is perhaps to be viewed as its own Masechta, perhaps to be viewed as part of a three-section Masechta. And also, as the Gemara is going to discuss, it's not necessarily clear from the Mishnah what the Mishnah is talking about, what is the actual subject of the Mishnah, until the Gemara clarifies that there are two distinct possibilities as to what's even going on in the Mishnah. So that would seem to challenge us a little bit. Okay, if I ask what the Mishnah is talking about, and the Gemara has to first clarify, is it A or is it B? But as we'll see, both A and B have what to do with each other, and that's a part of what we're going to try to figure out. So let's first address that question. So what is this Masechta about? And why is it here? And why is the Mishnah organized the way it is? And what is the Mishnah trying to tell us? So let's start first that question. What is this Masechta about? If you had to try to classify it, Rabbi Kalinsky spoke about it a little bit this morning, what is Baba Basra about? And that relates to the question of why is it where it is. Yeah, Levi?
The relationship between man and his fellow, specifically regarding, I guess, property.
Okay, so yeah, so that's all true, right? So that it's about the relationship between man and his fellow, and it's also about property. Although Bava Kama and Bava Metzia are largely about that as well. And so how exactly does it differ from those Masechtas is something that we have to figure out. And Tosfos is raising the question also, how does it continue from those Masechtas? So Tosfos says, the first Tosfos we have to figure out, so either it's its own Masechta or it's a part of this three-section Masechta. But one way or another, Tosfos says, we've got to understand why is it placed the way it is? It's a kind of question that Tosfos throughout Shas often asks. A lot of Daf Bezes, we have this question. So it seems that there is a lot to figure out about the nature of the relationship between people and what this Masechta has to offer. The Rambam, if you had a chance to see, the Rambam in his Hakdama to the Mishnayos overall, where he talks there about the structure of the Mishnayos and how they're arranged. So one of the points that he makes is that how is Bava Basra different than Bava Metzia and Bava Kama? So that's a difference that's going to be very important for us today, in that it is less connected to explicit psukim. Right? It's less connected to dinim that we can point to in Chumash, and that's something that we want to figure out exactly what to do with that. And that, while ostensibly what Levi said is true about all three of those Masechtas, they're all about people and they're about property and dealing with the property of other people, but Bava Kama and Bava Metzia deal with much more explicit psukim, and certainly, let's say, if you start Bava Kama, so you're dealing with the Nezikin that are detailed in Parshas Mishpatim, and when it comes to Bava Basra, so we have much less to point to in the Chumash as far as these dinim. So the Rambam writes that as a reason why they should be prioritized differently, so let this Masechta come at the end because it's the farthest away from the source in a sense. But that itself, the fact that we are looking at the world of Chazal here separate from a direct textual source, is itself something which is fascinating about Bava Basra. Really fascinating and really gives us a unique opportunity to see things in a different way. And the Maharal of Prague, his comments to Bava Metzia, so he explains it a little differently, that the idea is that it goes on a scale of just how bad your nezek is, essentially. That the three, the Seder is called Nezikin, and the three Masechtas together as one were called Nezikin, apparently. And the idea that they're all about damages is true on some level, but they're not the same kind of damages. So, as the morale notes, the Bava Kama, we're dealing with real absolute damage. You go and you smash somebody else's property. Or later in the Masechta, you're dealing with theft. You're stealing stuff. While Bava Metzia, so it's less criminal. It's more about dealing with interactions in the business world that may come to cause issues for other people if the rules are not followed. And Bava Basra is a step beyond that in terms of how far removed it is from overt criminality. Right? Again, Bava Kama is about destroying people's things or stealing people's things. That's really more criminal kind of behavior. Bava Metzia, more like white-collar criminal kind of behavior, potentially. And Bava Basra, it's a step removed from that. And the language the Maharal has is it's where somebody can be bought by Taina. Somebody can come with essentially, you might, to use modern terminology, you might call it a civil complaint. You're not going to say this guy stole from me, put him in jail, but you may have a civil suit. You may have some kind of a reason to take somebody to court because of the way he's constructing his property and because of various impinging on what you perceive to be your rights, which in the broad spectrum of legal issues, we could see that all together, but it's still different than the topics that are dealt with in Bava Kama and Bava Metzia. Everyone with me so far? Makes sense? And just to maybe say it a little bit differently and to put the ideas maybe together perhaps. So essentially, the theme of Bava Kama is the idea of first do no harm. First, you're not supposed to, again, be involved in overt criminality, not going around breaking people's things or stealing people's things. Bava Metzia is more about, okay, assuming that you're not looking to hurt somebody intentionally, but you're looking to go about your life, how do you do that in a proper way? And Bava Basra, again, it's to say just only a little bit differently, it just takes things to an extra level. It's about how do you create a society where it's not just that I'm not hurting you, and it's not just that, okay, we now have a way for us each to live as individuals, but how do we live as a community? How do we live as part of a shared space? And that's essentially the level that Bava Basra is taking us to. So in one sense, to go back to the Rambam's formulation, so it's maybe further away from the Chumash itself, but it has an advantage to it in that it is the most refined of the behavior. It's that essentially taking us not just from avoiding overt harm and not just from how we can exist as individuals, but the greatest level of care and consideration in our behavior as a unit. Rav Soloveitchik, a comment that Rav Soloveitchik noted, that if you look at Parshas Kedoshim, so Parshas Kedoshim has many of the themes of the Aseres HaDibros repeated, but in an expanded form, with a greater level of responsibility. So to give one example, so Aseres HaDibros tells us, Lo Seretzach, we're not allowed to murder, and Parshas Kedoshim tells us, Lo Samad Al Dam Riacha, we can't even passively be negligent and cause somebody's death or allow somebody's death to take place. And I believe Soloveitchik commented that it reflects the fact that Kedoshim is addressed to the Tzibor as a Tzibor, and they were capable of even greater levels of behavior and sensitivity. So the same ideas that are presented in more absolute forms in the Aseres HaDibros are asked of us in an even broader sense as a Tzibor. And that's what Bava Basra really reflects, a even more refined type of personality. So Shmuel, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just thought, I think that like the idea of doing the wrong and the moral seems to like jive very well, and that when you get more meta, like Bava Basra might be, like you're not going to be able to point to a specific thing.
Correct, exactly. So I think they do come together. I think the fact that there's more space for Chazal to figure it out and for the society to figure it out, and that's going to be one of the major themes of the Mishnah. And the fact that there is less direct instruction, which doesn't mean that the Torah is speaking any quieter in this Masechta than it is in Bava Kama and Bava Metzia, but the fact, I think you're right, and that's part of what we'll discuss now, is that there is a relationship between that point, the fact that there are fewer explicit psukim that will be directing us here, and the fact that it's us addressing social interaction on that level are not unrelated points. I think you're 100% right about that. So to take this a little bit further then, to ask what is the subject of Bava Basra, so one reason why this is particularly a special learning experience for me today, so I teach a class, teach a few classes in the college, so, and in Simson and in the other departments, so this afternoon is the first day of the semester, and I have a class called The Ethical and Legal Environment of Business. And there, one of the things we talk about the first day, so I'm excited to be able to talk about this twice in one day, but one of the things we talk about is we use terminology there, legality, ethics, and morality. So what's the difference between morality and ethics? So those words are often used interchangeably. They don't necessarily have an objective difference, but we can use them in more specific ways. So the way I explain in the class, I don't think any of you guys are in that class today, I don't think you've taken in the past, but the way I explain it there is that, again, it's a, somewhat of a subjective explanation. Not everyone does it this way, and you could use morality and ethics interchangeably, but the way I explain it there is that morality is right and wrong, and ethics is more of a system that develops in order to ensure that people are able to interact in a way that is fair and honest. And that also includes that their roles should be respected and their roles should be fulfilled in a honest and appropriate way. And that's the way we use ethics in that context. So essentially, Bava Basra is really the Masechta about ethics in that particular definition. Now, we use ethics in other kinds of contexts, and very often people use ethics to refer to anything ben adam l'chavero, which is kind of a loose usage, because when we talk about ben adam l'chavero, so really we have dinim, we have mitzvos, like we do with the rest of the Torah, but ethics we have as well, which is a little bit different. It plays out a little bit differently as far as what it addresses. It's not just about the overt averos, but it's also about the rules that are created for a society to function and to interact. And in that sense, if we define it narrowly that way, so Bava Basra is really about ethics in a way that differentiates it from any other masechta, more than any other you could use to find ethical themes everywhere, and however if you wanted to define the word very broadly, then certainly you can. But within that definition of ethics, so Bava Basra is about that in a unique way, and to be able to explore that and see what we can derive from that is a very, very exciting opportunity. Okay, so far so good? Everybody with me? Okay, so that being said, so now let's try to figure out how does the Mishnah instruct us in that way? And how does the Mishnah set a tone for the rest of the Masechta? So what does the Mishnah tell us? What does the first Mishnah say? And what I'm really looking for is, you can tell me the details, but what I'm really looking for is what's the message of the Mishnah? What is the first Mishnah of the Basra telling us? I don't want to take a stab before we tell you what's the message of the first mission of Bava Basra.
Well,
what are the details, right? Well, what's going on in the first mission of Bava Basra? So we have Mishnah tells us Hashutfin Shiratzu Lasos Mechitza. So you have partners. We'll see that term is perhaps broader than it seems. And we see that they want to make, every word here is subject to definition by the Gemara, so we don't know what shutfin necessarily means, we don't necessarily know what ratsu means, nor do we know what mechitza means. We know what lasso, well, no, we don't even know what lassos means. So none of those words are very clear to us yet, but the general idea seems to be that you have partners, at least metaphorically, if not actual partners, who want to make a wall. And what emerges from the Gemara is that we're not even sure if that's a proper translation. It could mean that mechitza might mean wall, and therefore we're trying to figure out if that's the case, what does the wall look like? Or it could mean, no, that mechitza is actually a division. And if they are dividing this area between them, so then they have to make a wall. So the structure of the Mishnah essentially is two possible readings, depending on what's conclusive in the Gemara. So it says, Hashutfin Saratsu Lasos Mechitza B'chatzer. So you have these partners who have a courtyard. A courtyard, it was a general format that was relevant during those days. They would have shared spaces for houses. So it was common to have kind of a courtyard arrangement where more than one house was there. This happens to, believe it or not, have major implications for a completely different area of halacha. That'd be impressive if you could guess right away. It's to do with the Jewish calendar. Actually has implications for, and has major implications for life in YU, believe it or not, because this actually affects how we understand Hilchos Chanukah and public spaces and where you can light Hanukkah candles or not, which has major YU ramifications. But it goes to the fact that in the time of Chazal, there was a common arrangement, both common in the sense of frequent and common in the sense of shared, that there would be these chatzar areas that were shayach to more than one person. So what's going on in the Mishnah is they want to divide between them. So the Mishnah goes on to tell you, okay, here are very specific rules as to how you make a wall. And why am I making a wall? So either because we decide we want to make a wall, and then the Mishnah tells us, okay, once you do that, once you make that decision, here's what a wall has to look like. If you use this material, it's got to be this many inches, etc., etc. And it would be divided equally between the two of them. What the Mishnah goes on to describe, and that means both in terms of the costs of providing the materials and giving the space for the material. So it's going to have to take up space between the two people, so they should equally share in giving the space and paying for the materials. And as the Mishnah also makes clear, that has a couple of ramifications. So it means, how do you lay out the expenses to begin with? And if the wall should fall, so then there were investments there, so who owns the material, who owns the space, etc. And that, some of the Tosfin, some of the Rishonim, get into some very fascinating issues about how do you ascertain who owns something, if you're not sure. If you are sure, the Mishnah tells us you should put a marking on the wall if it was made by both of them, so you know, okay, this was my side, this was your side, etc., etc. So either what happened was that the Mishnah tells us that they decided to make a wall, so we'll say, okay, here's how you do it, this is how a wall's got to look, and this is how the space has got to be divided up. Or, no, maybe that's not what happened. They just decided to split their space. And then the Gemara is saying, well, if you're going to split the space, you have to have a wall. Why do you have to have a wall? What does the Gemara tell us why you need to have walls between neighbors? Because, yes?
Hezekriya.
What were you about to say after that? Shmei Hezek. I was going to say Shmia, because there's a whole discussion about Hezek Shmia also. That's another topic we'll get to. But Hezekriya, correct, right. So the Gemara says that there's a concept which we'll define very loosely now, because that's a major topic that we'll get to explore in the near future, God willing. But the idea that there's some kind of real damage that happens by exposing someone else visually, by allowing them to be seen when they don't want to be seen. So it's a rough translation of Hezek Re'iyah. So because that exists, because that's real, so therefore you need to have a wall. And the parties have a right to insist that the other ones put up a wall for that reason. So it's a very unusual structure for a Mishnah. We just don't know what the Mishnah means until you see the Gemara. There's basically two tracks to interpret it. Right? So either it means they want to make a wall, so the Mishnah is telling us, okay, here's how you make the wall that you want to make, and this is the right that each party has to demand of the other. Or it's functioning on a different level. They just want to divide their property. And the Mishnah is saying, okay, well then you better make a wall. And here's how you make the wall. So if I were to ask you now, what's the Mishnah saying? Say, well, it's kind of complicated. Let's go through all the possibilities. But is it that complicated? Is it possible that with all those details, you still could emerge with a one-sentence summary from the Mishnah? If you really try, understanding that Chazal are very often giving us a story in every Mishnah in order to transmit some kind of a concept. So what is it that Chazal are really transmitting to us through this Mishnah in the briefest format? Presumably it's not the exact number of inches that the specific type of brick takes. If I were to ask you, what's the most crucial message that Chazal were telling us from this Mishnah? Levi, raising it.
This would be very, very careful with one another's property.
But is that what this Mishnah is? Okay, I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off.
I think so, because either way, we're concerned about this hezekry, which is not even it's not something that's tangible.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we're talking about just building a wall, just stam, it seems to be very clear that people pay, that it's paid for equally, and that it takes up, and that space is split equally also.
Okay, you're right. So these are definitely important values that come out of the Masechta as a whole, for sure. Definitely the parity and the equality, and also the extreme care, which is definitely a meta theme for this whole Masechta, taking things, like we said before, to an even greater level of sensitivity than Bava Kamma did. But if I had to pick three words that this Mishnah is really telling us, it's Hakol Kemineg HaMedina. Right, and remind me some later time, I'll tell you a story about this, maybe tomorrow. But here the Mishnah tells us that the real message here is that when you have this interaction going on, that there is either a joint project of creating the wall or this joint necessity of creating a wall because they're dividing up. So the main directive here is that, okay, you have to follow the minig. Hakol k'minig ha-medina. And if that's the case, so then you'll say, well, then why do I need all these details, right? This Mishnah tells us a lot, right, that we didn't really need to know then. So why it could have been so much shorter? Right? It could have said that if you want to make a wall, so follow local custom. So why did it need all these details? So the Rishonim addressed this to varying degrees, right? But Tosfos is among them. Tosfos over here, the third Tosfos, Bigvil. So what does Tosfos tell us ultimately is the issue? That the Mishnah and the Gemara later on is telling us these details in order to establish that, yes, on the one hand, the opening principle is Hakol k'minig ha-medina, that we are going to follow whatever the prevailing norm is, but not everything goes. There are some practices that don't necessarily fit into this category. And by default, yes, we're following the minig, but some minhagim are not going to make it. And just to look at those last line of the Tosfos here, Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, says, V'niru Rabbeinu Tam, V'davka b'hutsa v'dafna, that's a reference to the line of the Gemara, is there certain things that would be acceptable if they are the local practice? Aval pachos mikan, but if it was even less than that, afilu nogu minig hedjetu, that even if that was a minig, then that is a hediotic minig. That is a minig that is not to be respected. Hedjot, you know, comes from the Greek and in modern English, so it translates to the word idiot. But in ancient usage, it's a little less clear. You know, some usages we find we have it just meaning simple in a non-offensive way. So have to be careful a little bit how to translate it. But okay, whatever. It's not necessarily the minig that we're going to use. That, he said, goes on to say, Umochiach mikan, the eish minhagim she'ein lismoch aleihem. So there are some minhagim that we will not follow. Afilu heicha detanana kol minig medina. Even when we say the rule is we'll follow the minig of medina, it doesn't mean any minig. It means that the default is that we're going to follow the minig. That is the opening policy. But there will be minhagim that are beneath the threshold. And are not going to necessarily cut it. Okay, so far so good. So essentially, the major message of this Mishnah is that in these interactions, let's call them now shared space interactions, so how do we decide how the space and the resources get allocated and the rights get allocated? I call k'minig ha-medina. The minig is going to determine, with the qualifier that, not always, that the default minig is going to determine, but there may be minhagim that are not valid. Hi.
If all I'm saying is you make it with the material that is the minhag, how is that the point of the Mishnah? That's just a single.
Well, not necessarily, because then if you have to establish that there are some details that go along with that, so that's a part of expressing how the minig plays out, especially once this Rishonim are saying that not every minig is enough. So we have to lay out a basic format of what the expression of the minig looks like. But that ultimately, the minig has two parts. You know, the minig has establishing what the material is. I mean, three parts. It has establishing what the material is, establishing how much of the material is necessary. It's a part of what the Mishnah is also laying out. And then understanding that that should be split evenly. So all of that gives you a parameter, you know, basically makes the point that the minig dominates, but there are details to that too. And we'll see also, as Rishonim discussed, other aspects, which we'll see we'll go into further. Like, so for example, you know, why does it have to be so thick if ultimately the conclusion of the Gemara is going to be that Hezek Re'iyah is the issue? So you can You could stop that with a much lighter material. So then why do we get into this whole discussion? So that's something Rishonim are going to talk about pretty soon. But essentially what emerges from the Mishnah is that we have this minig template, and there are rules to how the minig is played out. So if that's essentially what's happening here, so let's ask on another level. So first of all, we have to clarify that minig is extremely important in Torah and in practice. Extremely, extremely important. But it means different things in different contexts, and we could talk about this for a long time. It's worthy of very extensive discussion. But just to give it a brief overview for a moment, and those of you who had a chance to see the Tshuvas HaRashba, it's one of the major sources in Rishonim where he tries to give kind of an overview, a little bit of a broad essay about what mean we talk about Minhagim. So there's a lot to say about it, but just to clarify a few categories for our purposes. So we put tremendous weight on Minig, and this Mishnah tells us we put tremendous weight on Minig, but they're probably different usages. So even though there's a link between them, and it needs to be clarified. So in various areas of Halacha, so we have Minhagim, so we have Hashem and Kippur Sukkot coming up. There'll be a lot of Minhagim that are relevant. And over the summer, we had the 3 weeks, which was very much affected by Minhag. So we put a tremendous weight on Minhag. But there, we mean something different than what we're talking about in the context of Mamonos. So we have the notion of Shema B'ni Musar Avicha V'Alti Tosh Tara Simecha, that we are supposed to be very careful with the Torah of our ancestors. And the idea that is expressed throughout Shas many times, that Im lo nevim heim b'nei nevim heim, for example, the Gemara says in Psachim, that we are imbued with a prophetic quality, that the Klal Yisrael has a aspect of understanding how the Torah comes together and what it's asking of us, and therefore when we take on a practice, so then there's a great importance to that practice. And as we all know, Minhagim play out on different levels. There are Minhagim that are accepted by all the Klal Yisrael. There are Minhagim that are associated with a certain area or a certain group within Judaism, whether it's a Sfardi Minig or a Yeki Minig or a Teimani Minig, or anything along those lines. So there are Minhagim that are much more widespread, there are Minhagim that are associated with smaller groups, but we put a tremendous significance on those Minhagim, and we consider that to be very important. Now, it's fascinating, because it's often traced, in fact, that Netziv writes that the obligation to observe a Minig is, we call Divrei Kabbalah. Divrei Kabbalah is not about mysticism, but Divrei Kabbalah means that which we have through tradition of Psukim, but not necessarily the Chumash. So if it's from Nach, so we have Psukim to look to, so that's what we call Divrei Kabbalah. So the Netziv says, that pasuk Shema B'ni Musar Avicha V'Alti Tosh Tara Simecha, that creates a Chiyuv B'Divrei Kabbalah, to listen, to obey, to protect Minhagim. Now it's interesting, because the idea of Torah Simecha, so you might say that, what do you mean Torah Simecha? Don't Minhagim usually follow the father? Isn't that a surprising application? So Musar Avicha, the Torah Simecha, the Torah of your mother is the Minhagim? So I think that the understanding is that what a Minig represents often is it's the intuited Chachma of Klal Yisrael. So we have Dinim in the Torah, and you have Dinim Darabanan that the rabbis officially set up, and you have Minhagim also. Rambam happens to include Minhagim also in the idea of Lo Sasser. We read a few weeks ago in the Parsha, Lo Sasser Min HaDavar, shouldn't deviate from that which the rabbis put into effect. That's how the Rambam understands the Pasuk. The Rambam didn't agree, but the Rambam understands that that Pasuk tells us we have to follow what the rabbis ordain, and he includes Minhagim there also. But the difference between Minhagim and Dinim Darabanan is, for the most part, loosely speaking, that Dinim Darabanan are specifically enacted and ordained by Chazal, while Minhagim spring up or more organically. So the comparison to Torah Simecha, meaning it's the kind of intuited understanding of how the halachic values are meant to be expressed. So they may differ from community to community. That intuitive understanding may play out a little bit differently, but it takes on a great significance. It's about how we have decided on a communal level to protect the values of the Torah. So that's very important. And there also we find that not every minig is equal. And a minig is not just like the fiddler on the roof and say tradition, but without disrespecting that, but it's that the idea is not just, okay, we did it, so we always do it. And very often in culture, it is kind of minimized that way. Well, we do it because we always did it. So that's what they did in Europe, so we do it like that also. But it's not the way we're meant to relate to a minig. We're meant to understand that our ancestors did something because they saw it as a fulfillment of a certain halachic value. And it's on us to continue that tradition of realizing that halachic value that way. But if it were to be determined that a minig is not connected to any kind of halachic value, or maybe it was just tied to a certain context, and that context is not relevant anymore at all, you know, because they wore a coat because it was cold, and now you're in a warm climate, so you don't keep saying it's a minig to wear the coat. You know, you can adjust to the temperature. So that idea of whether it's contextually dependent, or maybe it's just a mistake, maybe it just doesn't have any connection to anything. So then we don't have an obligation to continue or any value in continuing something that doesn't express any halachic value. So you could have a minig toes, or we call sometimes a minig shtos. You know, without getting into it, but there's a big debate about some of the practices of the upcoming season that discuss whether they're minhagim of value or not. So that's a part of the discussion, that there has to be what's perceived as a halachic value in the minig. It's not simply that we just continue whatever was done. So, and we also find that some of the svarim distinguish that in that context, so a minig has to have at least the approval, if not the initiative, but at least the approval of Talmidei Chacham, that the rabbinic leadership, they saw this minig, they supported it, they encouraged it. So then that's a minig that we want to keep going. While a minig that doesn't necessarily connect to anything that, at least not in a way that we can perceive, to anything that has actual halachic value to it, so then that's not necessarily a minig. Now, when it comes to mominos, it's really a different definition. And some of the svarim explicitly distinguish that way. That, okay, when it comes to ritual, so then you need the minig to have the involvement of the Talmidei Chacham. When it comes to mominos, we don't mean minig in that sense. We mean that this is the practice of the business community or the marketplace. It doesn't necessarily have to be that Talmidei Chachamim were involved in backing it up. Now still, we just saw Tosfos saying that there are some minhagim that don't meet the cut. So still, you have a similar structure. In both cases, we're saying minig, yes, but not everything's a minig. So too, we're saying here also, minig, yes, but not everything is a minig. But still, there's a difference that in the ritual world that we mean more minhagim that have a fulfillment of some kind of Torah value inherent in it. And here, we mean that this is the understood practice among the marketplace. This Rabbeinu Tam, by the way, I've mentioned before, but some of the other Rishonim quote Rabbeinu Tam, adding a little bit of flavor to this, saying that minig is also osios gehenim. If you switch the letters of minig around, you get gehenim. So you have to be very careful with that point. And I've heard people not be so careful at this point. That, you know, essentially it's a very delicate balance, because clearly we revere minig and we pay great attention to minig. But what the imagery here is that sometimes a minig can lead you astray if it's not a minig that has inherent value. And we often know that people pay more attention to minhagim than they do sometimes to actual Torah values. The story is told about the Shagas Aryeh, it's probably told about others also, that when he took on a new rabbinate, so they said to him, that the practice here is that every new Rav puts something in our Sefer of Minhagim to establish his stamp. So you should put something in here. So he said, okay, you should put the Asar Sedivros. It's in the Torah. It says it's in the Sefer of Minhagim, people take it much more seriously. So, you know, that very often the minute gets more respect and attention than the dinim that are in the Torah. So there's a reason for that, again, sometimes because just to counteract the idea that people shouldn't take Minhagim seriously, so we have a reaction to that, that we do sometimes emphasize them very strongly. But it's a delicate balance, because if a minig isn't really based on anything, so then it could lead you astray. And also, as we know, people fight over Minhagim a lot. People very often get very passionate, so if a minig is not worthwhile in the first place and people are fighting over it, so then you can understand why the Rebbein Tam will tell you it's connected to Gehenim. But that's hopefully not the default. A minig in of itself is something that we cherish and revere very carefully. And that's the balance that the Rishonim here on the Daf are telling us. Again, they hear the Tosfos and quote again in part, but the other Rishonim do. The idea that our whole premise, Hakol Kibinik Amedina, but you have to be careful. So, okay, within that delicate balance, that's what our Mishnah is telling us. Just to recap, what have we seen so far? Our Mishnah is telling us that in this area of marketplace or resource allocation interaction, minig is dominant. Minig is very important. But make sure it's a real minig. Make sure that it's not beneath the threshold. Make sure that it has actual value behind it, and that it shouldn't be a path to Gehenna, God forbid. But the primary message is that the minig is going to dominate. So now let's consider a very important question. Okay, so we started off saying that Baba Basra has less rooting in Psukim and Chumash than other Masechtas do. And within that context here, the Mishnah is saying, follow the minig. What kind of a din is that? Is that a din min haTorah? Is that a din midrabanan? Is that good policy? And we talk about what's rooted here. So now, just to consider, so the question I'm trying to ask is that in Bava Kamma, we're talking about Arba Avos Nazikin. These are explicit psukim and parshas Mishpatim, telling rules in detail about what happens in different kinds of nezik. And the Gemaras there are darshaning those psukim and applying them. And here, it's less the case. But what does that mean? So is this coming from any Torah directive? What is the level of obligation that this is telling? Is this a din d'rabbanan? Is it itself a minig? Or is this a recognition and a realization of something that isn't a chumash, just less specific? What would you say?
I don't fully remember, but I feel like I learned once that like there's a position that Sfara is deraisa.
So the Gemara sounds like that in a few places, right? The question is this itself a Sfara is an interesting question, but the Gemara, it happens to be that it's true also with Mominus overall, but even with the Bava Kamma kind of Mominus, you know, that the Gemara says, for example, one of the primary principles in Mominus, but also dealing with more rigid kind of situations, is hamotze mechaver olav haraya. Right, that if I want to make you pay me, so I have to, the burden of proof is on me. Which may or may not be the same idea as we call muchzak. That if somebody is in possession, in secular law they call it the possession is 9/10 of the law, which is very parallel to an idea we find in halacha, that the fact that you are holding on to something gives you a tremendous edge. And the Gemara calls that either muchzak or hamotze mechaver lo haraya. May or may not be the same idea. It's not our sugya for today, but they're strongly connected ideas at the least. That if I am coming to take away something from you, I am hamotze mechavero, and I have to be able to prove it. It's one of the issues also the Rishonim deal on this daf, because the question if the bricks fall, and then if there's a debate over who owns the bricks, so how much does it matter? They landed on my property, they landed on your property, so it happens to be one of the themes on this daf too. But in that context, the Gemara Bava Kama says that it tries to figure out what the pasuk is for Motzimecha Rover Elov Haraya. And there, the Gemara has a sentence that appears a few times, Lama Likra, Svaruhu. Now, why do I need a pasuk? Lama Likra. Why do I need any pasuk to tell me the din? It's a Svaruhu. It makes sense. Now, what does that mean overall for the role of Sukkim and Svaruhu? There's a lot to say about. And that could be relevant here. There are those who have, Shem Shkap, among others, who have discussed that Mamonos in particular has a different relationship to Svaruhu than other areas of Torah does. But here it sounds like there's something even a step beyond that. So is there a Torah value or a pasuk that this Mishnah is fulfilling? And is there the weight of any kind of Torah directive behind this Mishnah? And I'll give you a clue, or not a non-clue, that I think there's at least four or five possible answers to this. So I think the answer is probably yes, but what that might be, there's a good number of choices. I want to suggest one.
Yeah, didn't we just say Lo Sasser?
Lo Sasser as far as Din Drabanan in overall, right? So that the Rambam, against the Rambam says that any Din Drabanan is backed up by the authority of Lo Sasser. So is that what this is? This is Din Drabanan, and therefore it's like an enactment, and we are obligated for that reason? And why would they, even if that were the case, we would still wonder why were Chazal making an enactment. So Lo Sasser would bind us to listen to the rabbis, but then what you're saying is this is a Din Drabanan, and we got to figure out why the rabbis made the Din Drabanan. So even that would require us to, but it's very possible this is not a Din Drabanan, as we'll see. It may even be a Dereis to Levi.
How can something be a Din Drabanan if the rabbis are explicitly not decreeing something? They're saying
it's less than a Drabanan.
Yeah, maybe not less, it's just they're not decreeing it. They're saying, we're not going to make a judgment here. We're just leaving it up to local custom.
Except that is the din. You know, sometimes there are cases in the Gemara, which if you get involved in later in Bava Basra and in the beginning of Bava Metziah, that there are some situations where it seems like we just step back. But that's not where we're at just yet. So the idea, if the Mishnah is telling us this din, follow local minig. So what is that din? Is that a rabbinic enactment? Did Chazal say, okay, we need to make this rule from now on, everyone should follow the local minig? Or is this a fulfillment of some kind of a din min haTorah? I think there are a couple of choices. There are a couple of possibilities, just to mention a few. So one strong possibility is a pasuk we read a few weeks ago, V'yasisa hayasher v'hatov. Right, the Torah tells us that we should do that which is yashar, that which is straight, and that which is good. And the Rishonim, most prominently the Ramban, raised the question that seems very vague and redundant. We have the whole Torah telling us to do good things and to do honest things. What does it mean when it says that we should do that which is straight and good? So that's a topic the Ramban discusses over there, but one could say, just as far as relevant to here, that there is this broad imperative that we have to make sure that society is ruled by principles of yashrus and principles of goodness. And there's a lot to expound upon that. Maybe that'll be a Sunday topic someday soon. That is telling us, okay, we have this general concept of goodness and being straightforward, and that's a din, that's a mitzvah. And the pasuk goes on to say we shouldn't be thrown out of the land because we fail to live up to this value. So it has to come to mean something specific. So Chazal are telling us, okay, so here's how we tell you what it means to be yashar and good. You know, it's interesting to note as we try to figure out the relationship to psukim and if the Rambam is right, and there's kind of a sliding scale here in a relationship to psukim. There is a comment, first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos begins Moshe kibbol Torah miSinai. Right? The first Mishnah tells us that Moshe received the Torah at Sinai, which is great to know. That's important facts about Judaism. But you would think that that's the kind of thing you'd like to know before you start learning anything. Right? That seems to be pretty basic. So that should be the first Mishnah in Shas, not the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So some of the commentaries explain that the Bartanura, his commentary to the Mishnayos and the Meiri, explain that the reason it's there in the beginning of Pirkei Avos is because you have a Masechta there that says, smile a lot and be nice to people. Right, those are Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos. And Mekabel is Kol Adam Sever Panam Yafos, and have a desire to cover Chavercha, all these very nice ideas that one might think that what is the subtitle of Pirkei Avos? How to win friends and influence people as taught by the rabbis. Now, good advice from the sages, that's what it would kind of sound like. So the Meiri and the Bartanura write that we need to emphasize that no, this is not just good advice. This is dinim in the Torah, but the Chazal are expressing it through Pirkei Avos in a broader way, but they all reflect actual Torah principles. So it needs to be emphasized there that Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, it's no less true for Pirkei Avos than it is true for everything else. Remember when I was a kid, I used to collect commentaries on Pirkei Avos. So I got a hold of the commentary of the Vilna Gaon on Pirkei Avos. Oh, it's got to be all the beautiful razzle-dazzle Sefer Divrei Torah. Is going to be all these great things to say over. And then I looked at it. It was very disappointing. There was no razzle-dazzle Divrei Torah. There was no great speeches he could give. But all he was doing was he was quoting Gemaras. The whole parish is just quoting Gemaras. So that didn't seem like such a fascinating commentary. Until I find out, or somehow, that what his sefer was, that Graz Parish and Pirkei Avos, basically it's a thesis. Avos, according to Rashi and Bava Kamma, Avos, and we use that language in certain areas of halacha, like Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Nezikin, to talk about different levels of authority. And Rashi explains in Bava Kamma that Avos kari lohanech deksivim b'kra, that Avos refers to that which is in the Chumash itself. So what the Vilna Gaon was displaying is all the values that you see in Pirkei Avos, they trace back to Psukim. They trace back to Dinim of the Torah. He was quoting the Gemaras that explained the Psukim that Pirkei Avos was expressing. So fascinating kind of thing to be able to appreciate the Vilna Gaon. So in a sense, this is true here, even if the Rambam's point is correct, there's a difference between Bava Kamma and Bava Basra, but essentially it all traces back to what the Chumash is telling us. So Vaisisa Yashav Atov is probably a decent candidate. Also, for example, Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdov. There is this imperative to pursue justice. It's written on the wall of the Israeli Supreme Court. And the Gemara has various interpretations of that pasuk, but one of the interpretations I should maybe give you to look at, and we'll look at tomorrow, the Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about it just means sometimes figuring out how to balance competing interests. So if you have, the Gemara talks about if you have two ships that are trying to cross at the same time, how do you decide which ship gets to go first? And in that context, the Gemara invokes that tzedek tzedek tirdof, that there's a system of justice that requires you to figure this out. So that also could be the imperative, that essentially there are values like this. The Torah is saying that you have to have a society that is tzedek and a society that is tov, that is yashar. And the details of that may require some extra effort to figure out that might be somewhat societally dependent. But that's essentially the din here. I'll give you another possible candidate. So perhaps one of the most famous psukim of the Torah, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, which itself has many, many levels of application. But a part of what it's reflecting there is that it's kind of a basic morality, that the whole world has adopted that as step one. It's also something we talk about in this class in the college, that as step one of figuring out a moral system. There's a basic principle, kind of reciprocity, that I want this, so therefore I should assume you want it also. And it's a lot to talk about. All of this, you know, could take us far afield, but just the idea that we have to develop a moral system based on what I understand to be what people want, because it's what I want, so therefore probably you want it too. Or as the Gemara expresses in Shabbos, in the Hillel statement of the negative, Da'alach sani l'chevrcha lo savid, that which you don't want, you shouldn't do to someone else. So here again, a lot of these dinim are about applying that, and about figuring out, okay, the basic reciprocity, if I want you to do this for me, I should do it for you. Or the negative reciprocity, if I don't want you to do it to me, I shouldn't do it to you. And how do we figure out that we're dealing with a shared space, and how do we decide how to live with that? So again, the Mishnah is essentially telling us that this is one way to do it. Okay, there's a minhag medina, and that's the notion. As one other pasuk, so this pasuk actually did put on the Mar Makomos because I figured it would be the least likely for you to come up with on your own. But anyone want to help me out here? So well, there was one pasuk that was on the Mar Makomos this morning. If you got up to it. The pasuk from the first parak of Dvarim. Right. So what has the pasuk read? Anyone have in front of them? That's like Ushvata and Mishpat Sedek, Ben Ish L'Achiv, Ben Gero. Right. So there, the Gemara has various interpretations of what that word means, even Ben Gero. But and in a few places, the Gemara in Yevamos and elsewhere understand it to refer to a ger and tell us something about the laws of conversion, that there is a din there of tzedek in that context and of a bezdin in that context. But it sounds like from other Gemaras, and Rashi quotes them, so I put that on the Makor instead of directing it to the Gemaras, but there are other Gemaras, Rashi quotes a Gemara like this as well, that it comes from a language of dwelling. And that it means that you have to figure out how neighbors should act with each other. So Rashi quotes this in Chumash, that if you have a fight over an oven, or you have a fight over an apartment, so Shvat and Mishpat Tzedek, you have to deal with that in justice. So that also is an imperative, and if you want to get more holistic about it, so there it happens to be we read that. If you really want to get kind of Alpidar Chadrush, we read that the day before or the week before Tisha B'Av, usually that Kriya Satorah, and we talk about on Tisha B'Av Sinas Chinam and how we can't get along, etc., etc. And then if you're in that frame of mind, when you read the beginning of Dvarim, it's actually very striking because, again, it's a little bit Alpidar Chadrush, but it just all plugs in, that you know, if I ask you why is Dvarim significant, that we read it before Tisha B'Av, so you notice Echa is there in the parasha also, Echa is Salavadi, we read it in the Nigun of Echa, like Tisha B'Av, but it's actually much more relevant to Tisha B'Av in a much more profound way, because Tisha B'Av originally was caused by the Meraglim, who gave us a bad sense of perspective. The original Tisha B'Av was the Chet HaMeraglim, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about in the beginning of Dvarim. He's recounting the whole story of the Meraglim. And in the middle of that, he talks about all the principles of justice. And if you think of it all together, he's basically saying you have to have a way to judge things fairly, and you have to look at things in an unbiased way, and et cetera, et cetera. And there are a lot of dinim that are derived about justice from the psukim in the first parak of Dvarim. So one of them here is this idea that you have to judge with tzedek when there's going to be issues between neighbors, issues between people. So the Chassam Sofer writes in his Tshuvas, and he writes in a few places in his commentary to Baba Basra, also commentary to the Gemara, says that that's what this Masechta is about, that the Pasuk says there's a chiyuv to judge with tzedek how people get along, and this is the expression of that. So the Chassam Sofer writes, he says, this becomes a din min haTorah. He says, the Torah commanded that the rabbis work out a way that people are able to interact in shared space. And by doing that, so that's what these Mishnayos represent. That's what this Masechta represents. The kiyum of that din, the kiyum of that pasuk. And he uses an interesting language there, and we're actually going to run out of time soon, so this will have to be a two-part discussion. We'll have to continue this next time. But essentially, I want to quickly recap also, what you see here is that he says this is a din min haTorah, because a fulfillment of that din, and he uses an expression which has a lot of implications in other areas of halacha. Maybe we'll talk about that more at a different time. of Nimsar HaKasav L'Chachamim, that there are certain dinim where the Torah tells us about the din overall, but gives the space to the rabbis to establish what they are actually going to mean in practice. So that's what the Chassam Sofer writes. Says this is a din min haTorah, and the details were left to the rabbis to determine. But that becomes the din min haTorah. So therefore, it says that's what's going on here in this Masechta. This is the din min haTorah that wasn't spelled out the way Avraham Avos Nazikin was, not like Bava Kamma spelled out, but essentially in practice, it's the same thing, that these dinim were given to Chazal to establish, and that becomes the din min haTorah. There are a lot of other ways of saying that, but I want to recap before we have to daven mincha. What I want to call attention to here is essentially, so we have this Masechta is giving us the system of Jewish ethics in that narrow definition that we used before about how we relate to each other, and is telling us what the foundations are of Jewish ethics. So there's a lot more we're going to have to clarify even before getting to Hezekriya. We have a major part two. But just to recap what we spoke about, so we saw why is Bava Basra here. We use this definition of ethics, meaning having a system for people to function with each other that is fair and straightforward, and that this Masechta is about that. And the Masechta placed here, like Tosfos and others, raised the question, why is it here? So among, differently from the way Tosfos answers, so the Rambam writes because it's after Bava Kamma, Bava Siyah, because it's less textually based. And the Maharal says that it's less criminal. Bava Kamma is more about criminal, Bava Metziah is more about white-collar interactions, and this is much more subtle, more like a civil area. And we kind of merged the two and talked about a similar approach, that it's a higher level of sensitivity within society. And yes, that does also require more of a flexibility to social circumstances. It's not going to be as explicit in the Psukim, but that's essentially what's going on. And then we tried to figure out, what is the Mishnah telling us? What's the main message of the Mishnah? And we saw that beyond a lot of details and even ambiguity as to what the scenario is, but that the main message was that Hakol Kaminik HaMedina, we follow the Minik, even though not every Minik, and that's also why the Mishnah gives more details than we would have thought, and that's what Rebbeinu Tam emphasizes, that some Minhagim not, but the default is yes. And then we talked about how in general, in Torah, we pay a lot of attention to Minik. Again, not every Minik, but Minik as a default, and we differentiated that. In ritual, we have this notion of Titosh Torah Simecha, the intuitive wisdom of Klal Yisrael. Mamonos, it seems to be different. Still, not every minute goes, but it's not necessarily Tamid Chachamim making the minute. It's the marketplace minute. And that seems to be the major message of the Mishnah. Many more details still to come about that. But the question that we dealt with was, what is the weight of this Mishnah? Is it Din D'Rabbanan? Is it a minute in itself? Is it Din D'Oraisa? And we talked about the Bar-Nur and the Meir saying Pirkei Avos starts with Moshe Kibbol Torah Mitzinai to make the point that all of Pirkei Avos essentially is an expression of Dinim in the Torah, so it could be that this Mishnah, this Masechta, is as well. And we mentioned a few possibilities. Asisa Yashav HaTov certainly qualifies. Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof certainly qualifies. Avihavta Reicha Kamocha maybe in its own way qualifies because it represents this philosophical justice of reciprocity, which is the theme of a lot of this Mishnah, not doing to others what you wouldn't want done to you. And but then there's a more specific pasuk in the beginning of Devarim about Ushpata Mishpat Tzedek Ben Gero, which according to some Gemaras refers to a neighbor, refers to somebody living in proximity to you. And Chassam Sofer wrote in a few places that this is, we'll have to expand more on what he says also because there's other elements to it, that this is the Torah saying that this is how you have to figure out how to deal with people. And that Chazal, once they do that, that's essentially Masra Kasvul Chamim, that becomes the Din Min HaTorah that reflects that principle. So we have a lot more to figure out about what that means, about how Minig does indeed formulate that and how it expresses that. So Bez Hashem, we will do that next time. Again, tomorrow will be a Chumash day, so prepared for that. We'll look at the Shlishi of Kisavo, we'll talk about Slichus a little bit, and a lot ahead. All right, we'll head down for Mincha.